Welcome everyone once again to another episode of Outside the Panels. I'm Johnny the Machine Hughes, here today with Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson to talk about their recent books, The Dregs, Coming to Me, and their new project, which is due out in April, Her Infernal Descent. Okay guys, so thank you very much for joining me today. I know you guys are super busy. I know there's some news of some books that came out today for you guys. I just want to talk a little bit about some books that are coming out in the future and some books that hit the market a couple of weeks ago or so. So let me go back. Lonnie and Zach, you guys first met at Emerald City Con, Comic Con, if I remember correctly, as you once said. I imagine that people forget that cons are a great way for creators to actually bond and get together rather than just us fans turning up and saying, sign this, draw this sort of stuff. So how's your writing relationship developed over that time since your initial sort of get-together?
Well, I mean, we started out as those fans who were getting things signed, and like, we met on a bus that we both had, like, books that people had signed, and we were just both super fans at that point. And now when we go, we're creators, so it's a very different sort of story. We're not we're still kind of staying in crappy hotels and hostels and walking 40 minutes to the con, but it's a different thing because now we have our books on the table and people are coming to get us to sign stuff, and so it's been our relationship hasn't changed other than we just probably eat greasier food than we did 5 years ago.
So fame and fortune means you eat less, is that right?
yeah,
worse diet and less sleep. That's about all that's changed.
So
that's about it. No, I think like it's a surreal moment for both of us because when we did meet, we were on the other side of the table, and I think that's what has been the hardest adjustment, is kind of realizing that like the tables have literally turned to a point where people come to see us now. And, you know, it's not a ton of people, but we recognize that we're creating work for a very small subset of the indie comics community. And it just brings me back to, you know, when I read Sweet Tooth and went up to Jeff Lemire and was like, oh, I really love this. And, you know, we have a quick chat about a book that I really connected with. And to be on the opposite side of that is never not surreal.
Cool.
So, yeah, I think it's also about sort of when Zach and I had those great interactions with people that we looked up to, mm-hmm. it sort of influenced the way we try to interact with people who read our books and our fans, where it's, you know, it's always about giving back and being thankful because those are the, you know, the creators that I remember. So it's I guess we're a bit more mindful of that side of the game than we were before.
So there's no sort of high hikes for a signed copy of Dregs number one going at the minute then?
No.
Right. As a writing duo, how does that work, that writing work? Because in my head, and I've got to say, I'm a control freak. I'm a bit of a takeover Ted. If someone says, let's work together on something, I know that I'm not going to be able to keep my mouth shut. So how does it work for you guys? Does the plot come organically from you, or does it kind of like, does Lonnie write the plot and Zach the script, or vice versa, or do you sort of like key on elements?
It's really like when Zach and I say we co-write, it's like we seriously co-write everything. It's like everything is split 50-50, and I hesitate to even say that anything is split because really we do everything as this like one amoebic unit. And it's a really interesting way to do things because I think Zach and I, both like yourself, are very much control freaks. And I've tried to work with other people, and it doesn't work the same way as it works with Zach. And so I think we're very thankful that we've been able to find each other. And we put out a lot of ideas, and we reject each other a lot. And it's about finding something that we both love, because I think at the end of the day, what keeps Zach and I going as a creative team is that we both have very similar tastes in the kind of stories that we want to tell. And we both shoot for, you know, similar heights of like, you know, how good do we want this book to be? We set high standards for ourselves. And I think because of that, we're able to work very well as a team together.
Brilliant. Zach, do you want to add to that, or are you just happy? You're happy to sit there in the praises of your colleague?
I think it comes down to I often describe it as like having your first reader in the room, and I think that one of the things that Lonnie and I have really cultivated is an atmosphere where no idea is a bad idea, or all ideas are bad ideas, one of the two, where we kind of just allow each other to kind of speak as things come to mind and kind of commit things to paper. Like, we both sit there with the same Google Doc open on both of our laptops side by side, literally typing in the same document. And sometimes that's I type something out, Lonnie erases it, rewrites it, I erase what Lonnie just rewrote, and then we find something happy in the middle. Or it's about really just challenging one another to do better at every turn. And I know for myself that I've been in rooms with other people where you say, hey, that idea sucks, and they completely shut down. Whereas, hey, that idea sucks is like every 30 seconds.
Harsh taskmaster. So which one of you is the spell check freak then? Because there's going to be one of you that's kind of like...
Probably Lonnie. I can't spell very well.
My spelling's fine. It's my typing that sucks. an old joke. What can I say? Do you ever come to sort of blows over key parts? You kind of have that sort of dynamic where it sounds like it's really open and friendly, but do you ever get to that situation where, Lonnie, you really like this one particular part and you don't want it to change, and Zach, you're like kind of like, well, actually, it needs to change because I really dig this other part on Act 3? Or does it just kind of evolve?
Yeah, that stuff definitely happens. It's not that often, mm-hmm. and when it does happen, it's generally like we'll argue and like get sort of heated for like maybe 10 minutes, and then after that, everything is just like immediately back to normal, because we don't have the luxury of being mad at each other for any longer than that. So it happens, but I think at the end of the day, what Zach and I both realize is, as much as we want to control things, we're both just trying to tell the best story we can, and sometimes that means conceding when your idea isn't the best one on the table. Okay. Or sometimes, even if you do love your idea, it's not the best one that serves the plot or the theme or the characters. And I think a lot of writing, both co-writing and writing for yourself, is about being able to recognize those elements and giving into your instincts and intuitions in that way.
Okay, great. So it's very much a collaborative process, which I totally get that. Reading the books that I've read The Dregs, I've read Coming to Me, and of course the new book that's coming out next month from Aftershock. All the stories seem to be quite a personal story, so it's kind of, I'm not going to say that superhero comics are bad, because in the end of the day we all love our own superheroes, right? But some of the stuff that you write is quite emotive, and it does strike a chord with lots of fans and readers. For me, it's really key that you guys are kind of on tune, so that the message is consistent throughout the books, especially when you talk about like The Dregs, which was what, 4 issues long, and you've got the ongoing from Aftershock, which I think is 6 issues. Is that right?
Five.
I'm English conversion rate. also, self-deprecation works. Okay, so taking a step back a little bit, The Dregs had a very literature feel to it, with all the Don Quixote, and of course you had Philip Marlowe. Now, your new book from Aftershocks, Her Infernal Descent, shares more than a few traits with Dante's Inferno. What do you think is the relationships between sort of literature and comic books, and how are you guys making that bridge?
I think for both Lonnie and I, we grew up reading comics at a time where like Vertigo was, you know, the reigning king of compelling storytelling. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we both really attached ourselves to was Neil Gaiman's Sandman, which has a very, you know, literary influence. Mm-hmm. But I think for the most part, we looked at the modern comic book market when we were doing The Dregs and didn't see that literary influence as much anymore. And we are both, you know, people who read a lot of literature and use literature to inspire our work. and really wanted to kind of inject a different sort of flavor into our work so it stood apart, but also stood on references that were outside of the comic book industry, stood on things that were part of a longer legacy in literature, and show that, you know, you can treat comics like high art. You can say really, you can make really compelling arguments with comic books, and just because they're words and pictures doesn't mean you should dismiss them any less than, you know, something by Philip Marlowe. Or sorry, Philip Marlowe, fuck, Raymond Chandler. God damn it.
God damn it.
It's early.
it is early. So for the guys listening, due to the many constraints of comic book universe worlds, as people know, I'm in the UK. I have the pleasure of being hours ahead of the US. Don't ask me why that works, but so it is. And of course, I'm speaking to these guys, and also US and Canada. So I'm speaking to these guys, and it's what, like 8 a.m. in the morning? So
I literally woke up about 30 minutes ago.
So you woke up by my Skype alarm. Brilliant. All right, okay, so you had the dregs, you had Come Into Me, which when I first read it, all I could think of was the Steve Martin and Lily Tomlin movie All of Me, so thank you for that. Had to watch that again just for fun. And then of course the new book from Aftershocks. Just gotta say it quickly, when it comes to the poet in the book, who was Channel Etrigan through that? Anyone?
Oh, we both were. We realized afterwards that, like, trying to write a character that speaks in verse is not a lot of fun when you're scripting.
I kind of love it.
I love
writing poetic verse. It's like, it's kind of a pain sometimes for sure, but it also makes his writing his dialogue is completely different than everyone else.
I'll be honest, whenever there's an issue where he's not in it for like 12 or 13 pages, and I was relaxing. I was happy.
So there you go, DC. If you ever need a scripter, writer for a new Etrigan book, Lonnie's the man.
Oh, man, yes. Absolutely.
I would love to write Etrigan. I think we both would.
Well, I, the way it sounds, I think one person wants to write Jason Blood and the other one wants to write Etrigan.
Yeah, maybe we can split up the duties on that one.
Yeah, definitely. So, regarding her Infernal Descent, it's got its links, as we said, to Dante's Inferno. I am in the unfortunate position where I recently lost someone, and reading the book, there's a sense of emotion in that book, and it's a credit to you guys. Absolutely, it gets you from page one all the way through. So kudos and round of applause for such a great book.
Thank you. That's great to hear.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. And I guess my question is, the character that's going through the loss within the book, is that based on an event that you guys have had, or is it an event you guys have witnessed, so you can then sort of, I don't want to say capture the moment, because that sounds quite spooky and freaky a little bit, but you know how you kind of delve into the emotion. It's not just the sadness that you've got going on there, you've got the guilt that she survived versus the people who are gone, which is quite a surreal type of environment. So I was just wondering how you guys managed to create that level of emotion within that book.
Yeah, well, I mean, the lead character in the book, the mother who goes through hell, her name is Lynn, and she is very much based off of my mother and Zach's mother. Zach and I both have mothers named Lynn, oddly enough. And Zach and I both have experienced loss in different ways over the course of our life. I lost my mother almost 4 years ago now, and so a lot of that emotion has been put in there. Zach's had some personal experience as well that are not dissimilar. So we're not strangers to that kind of thing, and we wanted to make sure if we were telling a story about grief and loss and overcoming it or not overcoming it, that we were doing it in an authentic way. And I think having those experiences is what allowed us to write something that hopefully resonates with people who have also undergone similar things.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. As a testament to the book, I can say, hand on heart, it resonates. You've absolutely nailed it, bang on right, at least from my point of view. This brings up the next question, that the dregs is also emotive in a totally different way, in that you follow Arthur through his crusade as he looks to rewrite his tilting windmills. So I guess I know we've spoken previously on for Comic Crusaders on one of the texts. You were saying in the past how Arthur's world is based slightly in, is it based in slightly just off Vancouver? Is that kind of the premise, that it's kind of like just out of your corner of your eye type of environment?
Yeah, I mean, like we went to school just like three blocks outside of the area that we would consider to be the dregs in real life. So Lonnie and I kind of were in that environment every day for like a year. And so we spent a lot of time after, whenever the series was greenlit, walking those blocks of Vancouver, because Vancouver is very unique in that it has about, what would you say it is, Lonnie, like 10, 12 square blocks where the homeless population is almost entirely centralized.
Yeah, something like that, if that much even.
Yeah. And so we spent some time walking down in that area and kind of just really absorbing it. And even the book is based off of photo reference that our artist Eric Zawadzki went down to that area and took, putting his life in his own hands, because they don't like when you take photos down there. And so, yeah, it's based off of real world locations. And like in the first issue, those maps that are behind the panel borders, those are the real maps of Vancouver and the real area as we approximated it. We literally, when we were writing it, took a map of Vancouver and worked out the distance between points in the story and, like, you know, how long it would take them to walk from point A to point B and that kind of thing. So we really were intense about it.
It's good to see that, you know, it's not just like a throwaway part of the story. It's integral to the dregs all the way through, which is great. How's it been working between different comic companies? Because you guys, the dregs and Coming to Me, is both from Black Mask. You've got Her Infernal Descent coming out from Aftershocks. And you've got a book out today. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
What's out today?
Cable, the time traveling mutant. Cable 155.
I remember when I paid 10 whole English pounds for X-Men 201, because that was Cable's first appearance.
Oh, man.
Oh, nice.
That was like 10 whole English pounds. Man, that was my then wife practically divorced me. It was unbelievable. I didn't have the heart to tell her that I spent £60 on the first appearance of the Black Widow in Amazing Spider-Man. But hey, for a reason why they're exes, right? Okay. So you've got a wide range there. So, you know, you've got your emotive indie stuff. You've got Aftershock, who's, I think, over the last couple of years have probably made the biggest explosion in the comic book world with some of their twists and turns in some of their books, like Insects, or Insect, however you pronounce it. And you've got Dark Arc, and other things that kind of have changed people's thoughts and dynamics. And then, of course, you've got Black Mask, who have gone from doing like sort of crime stuff to now moving across into some emotive stuff. And now you're with Marvel. Oh my God! See, I was all right until you said Marvel. No, I'm joking. So how is it working with the different publishers then? How does that work? You signed any exclusive contracts yet?
Nothing exclusive, but it is honestly, it's pretty strange in that all the companies we work with are completely different, and they're also all the same at the same time.
Yeah.
Some of the independent companies we work with, like, they have different number of people working for them. Some of them it's easier to get answers from, some of them it's harder. Marvel is, you know, their editorial process is much different, much more hands-on. So for us, it's been sort of fun seeing and testing out the waters at different places. But yeah, comics is a strange place where like all these companies are allowed to be completely different from one another. And we're sort of thankful that they're not all the same at this point in our careers.
I think that's a really good point, in that whilst they all do the same thing, i.e. put out comic books, they go about it in different ways. And I think you'll probably find that they have different audiences. So Marvel, with it being a huge Disney thing, you know, you're not going to see something like the dregs on Marvel. But
yeah, exactly. We have people reaching out to us on Twitter and stuff, you know, who are like lifelong X-Men fans, and they're excited for our run on Cable. But, you know, the chances of them picking up Come Into Me or Her Infernal Descent or the dregs are like pretty slim, but we're okay with that. It's different markets, right?
Indeed. And I remember you guys are huge X-Men fans from way back when, is that right?
That is right, yeah.
Yeah, we grew up X-Heads.
Yeah, we both got our start as X-Heads, yeah.
Fuck. Oh my God, I did not know that was a term.
No, it's not.
It's definitely
I am going to start a trend. X-Heads, brilliant. All right, so who's your favorite X-Men?
X-Man.
Or X-Woman, whichever you want to pronounce it.
That's really difficult to choose. I have a soft spot for X-Man Nate Gray for some reason. He hasn't had any particularly good runs, but I like
him.
The Warren Ellis stuff is good, that's true. There was some issues back in there. Otherwise, like I've always been partial to Nightcrawler.
Oh, I have a friend, a colleague on the No Prize podcast, Banfing Bob. He will absolutely be buying your books now that you've said that.
Amazing.
he is a Banff fan for life.
Yeah, I would say Nightcrawler, Kitty Pryde, and Magic are probably my three favorites.
All right,
I'm a huge Phantom X fan. I absolutely love him. I don't know what it is about him, but he just speaks to me. And I really, really, really love Cyclops.
Yes! Yes!
Yeah.
Excellent.
I would kill to bring him back to the normal X universe, like not this like teenage version that's running around, but like, you know, old school Scott.
You never know. Marvel are in the middle of a reboot, so you never know what might happen in 6 months down the line. They'll reboot again, and Bob's your uncle.
Every year, the annual reboot.
It's funny because one of the things that I talk a lot about is how indie books are different from big two books, and that you guys are doing predominantly indie books, is fair to say. You create your own universe, you control your own universe, and it goes from what you want from point A to point B and all the way through. That's a fair step, right? That's a fair shot.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the big two, it's brand. So is it easier to work on your own stuff where you're in control of your destiny, or is it easier to work with the brand where you can't really play outside the playpen too much, because you know sooner or later it's going to have to get rebooted or reshuffled or restarted?
I think it's less about that and more about like you learn to live with them in different ways, because the creator-owned stuff is, you know, we are in control of everything, and at the end of the day, there's nobody to blame but us, whether or not it's a success or a failure in terms of how it's received. Mm-hmm. And so you learn to live with that, the fact that it's all on you. And with our experience working for licensed stuff, you learn to live with the idea that you're not fully in control and that you have to concede sometimes and you have to play their game. So they're different in that sense. It's like it's easier for create your own stuff because you get to do whatever you want, but that makes it harder at the same time. Mm-hmm. Whereas our experience with licensed is that can be easier because we're not fully in control and there's parameters set and you're giving back to a world that already has so much done in it. So mm-hmm. a lot of like the character work is done for you and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. they're different experiences.
You mentioned about how Vertigo was your bag back when. News recently that Gaiman's coming back to Sandman. How do you guys feel about that?
Dude, I would murder someone to write one of those Sandman books.
Apparently it's Neil Gaiman you've got to murder, but I wouldn't say it on a podcast because people are listening to this. I don't know. Like, you know, international law, whatever.
I think we're huge Sandman fans, and I think at the end of the day, what it comes down to is we've seen some companies deal with bringing back certain properties in ways that we didn't think were very...
Stay clock.
Yeah, that weren't very... They're not very kind to the people who originally created them, which is fine. You know, they're in their right to do that, I guess. But the thing that's appealing about this Sandman universe is that it has Neil Gaiman's full blessing, and he's going to be there curating it, and he's going to be there every step of the way. And to know that the person who created it is sanctioning this and wants it to be a bigger thing is that's the part that's really exciting for us.
So, great point. You've mentioned the Doomsday Clock. What's the issue with Doomsday Clock? Just so we can. Are we able to say? Do we have time? Is it the Alan Moore ownership thing that DC and Alan Moore kind of gone on for years, or is it something else that's kind of?
Yeah, it's largely that. Just the way that they've dealt with him as an individual and as a creator, I think, has been not the best over the years. But you know, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, cool. I don't want to, you know, get you in trouble with DC if you're pitching later today. That's fine. see how nice I am to you guys. The flip of that, of course, is that when you get a return and creator come back to the fold, does it always work? Think, for example, Frank Miller and DK3. Was that a success or was that not a success?
I mean, it's always a struggle, right? I think the biggest thing that... these returning creators come back to is that, like, you need to be able to push the story in a new direction, and the story needs to warrant a continuation, not just for the sake of making sales, but for the sake of telling a really compelling story that, you know, ruminates on similar themes or takes them an even step further. Mm-hmm. Dark Knight 3 kind of just didn't do that, and in a lot of ways, I feel like that's what I've read all of Doomsday Clock that's come out so far. And while I think Gary Frank's art is unbelievable, mm-hmm. I don't really understand right now why we're reading this. Like, what it hasn't really won me over in terms of, like, what the point is and what the themes are. Because it kind of just seems like it's like, well, here's just more Watchmen. We're talking about the same themes, whatever.
I get your point. I absolutely do. The first issue I read, I was like, whoa, how great is this? And then by the third issue, I was like, I've just read this issue. What's
going on there? Exactly. Exactly.
So you've worked with different artists on your various books. How's that different each time? Because obviously different writers bring different balls. I think the artist for Her Infernal Descent has an element of Gary Frank and an element of Barry Windsor-Smith, especially when it comes to how... Is it William Blake that's in the book? How William Blake's portrayed in that very old style, whereas the Dregs is very panel heavy. So how's it work? How's that change your writing dynamic then, if you've got to think about things like panel structure to suit the artist that you've got on your project?
Her Infernal Descent is an interesting one, mostly just because we decided on a preset panel structure before we even started writing the book. If you look at the issue now after I tell you this, there's only 5-panel pages and 9-panel pages in that book, and that will be steady throughout the entire book from start to finish. And it's because the book is about the 9 levels of hell and the 5 stages of grief. And so we've used those 2-panel layouts to communicate those 2 things. Mm-hmm. But I think in working with a bunch of different artists, like... Lonnie and I write really dense scripts. Like, typically, like, a 24-page issue comes in around 60 pages for a script for us.
Should we just clarify? You mean word heavy, not yes. Just as in stupid. You know,
yes. Yeah, word heavy. Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying to promote the book. Let's not call it stupid.
Yes, we get into a lot of detail, and we really try to paint. We write it like prose almost, in a way, because we want to communicate the moods of the characters in some of the metaphors and hidden details that may not even necessarily make it into the final page, mm-hmm. but the artist will fully understand the emotions and the themes at play as they're reading it, as they're drawing it. And I think that that's also contributed to like our literary approach to storytelling in a lot of ways.
Brilliant. Yeah, I think every artist works differently and they each like certain direction and they don't like other direction, and some of them will draw exactly what we write in the script and some of them will deviate from it. And I think a lot of working with Eric was sort of learning that each artist is different. And on the Dregs, you know, he would sometimes take our 9-panel grids and turn them into 12 or 16 panel pages, or sometimes he would completely change a layout, or sometimes he would leave it exactly the same. So it's really, we try to make it a collaborative process and learn what each artist likes and what they don't like, and try to write scripts for ourselves, but also, you know, that are tailored to specific artists that we're working with.
Okay, cool. Excellent. Okay, so last couple of questions. Let's see, is the Dregs getting a trade paperback treatment soon?
Oh, it already has one.
Has it? Excellent.
Yep.
Brilliant. Is that out now for the guys that will look back and see what is the hell we is we're talking about now?
Yes. Yes. I think it's available on Amazon, at least Amazon.com and .ca. It's probably criminally underprinted, but if you order it, it will arrive on your doorstep at some point.
Okay. Sounds like a Rob Liefeld promise there. Hey, kickstart me and we'll get it eventually. You can't laugh at that. That's not really, you're not supposed to laugh at that. It's professional. All right, okay. I'm a big fan of Ryan K. Lindsay, as I've mentioned before to other people. And I asked him this exact same question that I'm about to ask you guys. In your books, is there ever going to be a happy ending?
Probably not, no.
Yeah. Well, there's maybe not happy, but perhaps there will be seeds of hope.
Okay. All right. So watch out for spoilers there then. I should have said. And then finally, just a shout out. I saw the advanced copy of in Her Infernal Descent, and I was a little bit confused. You've got a colorist on board who I really like, whose work really works for me a lot of times when I'm seeing it. But the book itself that I saw was black and white. Is it a black and white book with shades of grey thrown in, or will it be coloured by the time it hits the press?
It is fully coloured.
All right, okay, cool. See? And I was given the benefit of the doubt when I did the advance review, just to make sure.
Yes, well, thank you for that. It's, D. Cuniff is coloring it. He was the colorist on The Dregs, and he's incredible, and we're very thankful to be working with him again.
I think colorists are probably a huge, huge component of comic books right now. I see a lot of books, as you can imagine, and the books from, like, Zenoscope and Dynamite, Zenoscope especially, their colors are absolutely bang on. The colors are the best thing about a Zenoscope book. But how many people go into the comic book shop and go, "Ooh, I really like that shade of green. Let me buy 12 issues of that."
Yeah.
So apologies to all the colorists out there. But when I can give the shout outs to people like Dee and the people like Dave Stewart, I am more than happy to do so for all the work, which helps, of course, set the tone of the book. That's fine. So, Coming to Me is out from Black Mask. It came out on the 14th of March. So go down to your local comic book shop, check it out. It should be in last week's list. If they haven't got it, get it back ordered. And then, of course, Her Infernal Descent from Aftershocks is out on the 18th of April. If you can't wait for the 18th of April to check out these guys' work, by all means, get down to your local comic book shop now, buy Cable. Okay, guys, thanks very much for spending the time with me and taking the time out of your busy schedule. I really do appreciate it. Fans of your work, obviously, go back into the local comic book shop, get the Dregs on order if it's not there on the rack already. Get your pre-orders in for Infernal Descent, a great piece of storytelling. I've been Johnny the Machine Hughes. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on UCPN, including the No Prize Podcast, the Definitive Crusade, the Dynamic Convergence, and, of course, the No Prize Podcast. This is me saying bye. See ya.